Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahfouzi. Will Israel attack Iran? This question has been on the forefront of Middle East politics for some time now. A high-volume frenzy has broken out inside Israel on this topic almost on a daily basis, whether it's TV or radio or newspapers, to public debates over a possible military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities, with or without U.S. assistance. Israeli officials have even said this conflict could last 30 days and have claimed 500 Israeli lives. Well, in this news analysis, we'll discuss the possibility of such a strike, the consequences for the entire world, and whether this is a ploy by Netanyahu to distract his general public from its internal problems like unemployment and a protest movement against social injustices.
Israel's saber-rattling against Iran has been on the rise recently. Reports from Tel Aviv say Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister for Military Affairs Ehud Barak are adamant to attack Iran's nuclear facilities before the U.S. presidential election in November. Netanyahu has even sent his National Security Council chief Yaakov Amidror to meet with the leader of extremist religious political party Shas to seek support for a military attack against the Islamic Republic. A top Israeli official has even predicted that the war with Iran would last 1 month and would end with 500 Israeli casualties. But it seems that Netanyahu and Barak are becoming more and more isolated. The United States is not keen to open another war front in the volatile Middle East region, at least not a few months before its presidential election. And many Israeli politicians, military, and intelligence officials oppose a unilateral attack on Iran. The reason? They cannot predict what Tehran's reaction would be, with Iran pledging a crushing response to any attack. The Iranian defense minister, however, has dismissed Israel's war rhetoric as worthless and mere propaganda. Experts say the intensified war rhetoric coming out of Tel Aviv may be the result of internal opposition within the regime.
It also comes at a time when there is growing opposition to the Netanyahu government in Israel. And of course, whenever there is an internal opposition in Israel, the response of an Israeli government is to start banging the drums of war in order to try and rally the population behind it.
Israeli officials cite the threat of Iran's nuclear energy program for their warmongering. Iran, a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, says its nuclear program is for peaceful purposes, and the International Atomic Energy Agency has found no evidence of diversion in Iran's nuclear energy program. Ironically, Israel is widely believed to be the only possessor of nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter confirmed in 2008 that Tel Aviv possesses at least 150 nuclear warheads. The Israeli regime has launched many wars during its 64-year emergence. The last two were the war against Lebanon in 2006 and the war against the Gaza Strip in 2008 and 2009, in which thousands of civilians were killed by the Israeli war machine.
I would like to ask you, name me another country in the world. 2003, Israel was the cheerleaders for the war in Iraq. 2006, it went into war in Lebanon. 2008, 2009, it attacked Gaza. Now it talks about attacking Iran. If you read the Israeli papers every day, they talk about, should we attack Gaza? Should we attack Lebanon? Should we attack Syria? Name me another country in the world that falls into that category.
Let's find out what our guests think. Let me introduce them. A co-director of the International Action Center, Sarah Flounders, joins us from New York. We have security analyst Charles Schubert joining us from London. And senior editor of Veterans Today, Gordon Duff, joins us via Skype from Ohio. I'd like to welcome all our guests. Sarah Flounders, first, let's start off with you. Under the UN Charter, does Israel, or the U.S. for that matter, have a legal right to preemptively launch a military attack on Iran?
Well, under the UN Charter, actually, Article 2, Clause 4, it's important to recognize that not only is it considered a real violation of international law to launch a war, but it's also a violation to threaten war. And that is something that Israel and the U.S. have done continually. Every time the U.S. claims that all options are on the table, that is a direct threat of war, and it's meant to encourage Israel to make its threats of war. I think a great deal of this is coming out of the deep, deep frustration that the U.S. and Israel feel on the eve of the non-aligned meeting. They've made every effort to isolate Iran, and it's clear they have failed. They've made every effort through sanctions, through war threats, and that's not the response that is coming from the global participation in the non-aligned meeting in Tehran.
Charles Shubrich, how serious is Israel's threat of an attack on Iran?
I think for the time being, it's not a serious threat. Clearly, the threat itself, as your previous speaker has alluded to, itself is important and significant in ramping up tensions, a war of words which then becomes self-reinforcing. And of course, that plays very much to the internal Israeli dynamic that your lead piece actually spoke of. But all of this, of course, is very contingent upon American domestic and international politics. And at no point between now and November, certainly, in my estimation, would the United States be keen to have an attack that it is widely considered within the United States and within the political establishment to be unnecessary at this point. And I think there's some resentment within the United States political hierarchy, if you like, that Netanyahu in particular seems to be attempting to force Obama and the rest of America's hand on this issue.
So why is Israel doing that? Obviously, they know that, knowing that there's going to be elections coming up, but they're pushing on that issue. What reason could they have?
I think the November deadline is one that actually exists for Israel in terms of, were Obama to be re-elected, that may then reduce the chances of American support in the near term, at least, without further or more credible evidence of an actual nuclear program producing nuclear weapons in Iran itself. Clearly, up till the election, Israel has the possibility, one interpretation would be that, of course, if a strike were to take place before November and America were not to support it, then that would hand a propaganda victory to Romney, his Republican competitor, that, of course, America was not supporting Israel. But I think increasingly, it can't be the case that Israel can count on completely 100% carte blanche support from the American public at this time.
Gordon Duff, let's hopefully you can perhaps clarify or elaborate more on this, because this is one angle that's really important. Can Israel attack Iran without U.S. approval? Or will it attack without U.S.'s approval, knowing it will drag the U.S. into this war anyways?
Well, in actuality, Israel's military is far less robust than they claim. Over 50% of their attempted draftees dodge military service. Their fighter aircraft are at great risk over Iran, even though Iran has not received the S-300 air defense system that Russia had promised years ago. They have no way of reaching Iran whatsoever without traveling over either Iraq, attacking from Azerbaijan, where it is believed that they have secret facilities, or flying across Saudi Arabia. All of those countries, were they complicit in an attack on Iran, would suffer dire consequences. Israel is, as pointed out by earlier speakers, saber-rattling because Netanyahu is at extremely low popularity. Yesterday, there was an attempt on the life of General Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the U.S., a day after he informed Netanyahu that the U.S. would under no circumstance participate in an attack. Netanyahu threw a tantrum, and a few hours later, there was an attempt on the life of the general. And this information comes from insiders at the Pentagon. Netanyahu is being held by members of the U.S. military as responsible for the attempt on America's highest-ranking soldier. But Israel primarily is involved in trying to get Mitt Romney, a puppet of American organized crime, who had just traveled to Israel with gambling boss Sheldon Adelson, collected $60 million in cash in Israel and in London. Which is a violation of U.S. law. and they want Mitt Romney in, and it has very little to do with Iran. It has very much to do with taking down world currencies, with another pump and dump in the U.S. Economy, and Iran may be a victim, may be held up as a target, but Israel's own problem, and of course the ability to misuse and milk the United States financially dry is a primary goal of Israel. Their control in Washington over some aspects of government is complete. Their control over the Obama White House currently is non-existent.
Sarah Flounders, let's look at the U.S. stance in terms of a summary of it anyways and see if you agree. They've said time and again all options are on the table, using a carrot and stick policy. But statements from the White House are considered too vague by Israel. That's one interpretation of it. Now, could it be that by publicly raising the possibility of an attack on Iran, Israel perhaps wants to push the Americans into showing their hand, so to speak?
Well, there's a lot of push and pull going on, but it is important to always recognize that Israel, of course, can't do anything without U.S. approval. Israel is a completely dependent, financially, in every way, diplomatically, politically, its military equipment, $60 million a day, every day for more than 60 years, Israel has received from the U.S. So they can't survive without U.S. approval, and they can't move in any kind of an attack without U.S. approval and knowledge and information beforehand, that's for sure. The U.S. doesn't give military equipment out around the world unless really, in effect, they control the trigger on it. But all of this is this talk of war, this threat of war, a violation of international law in itself. But all this constant threat of war is an effort to change the terms of the debate, change the discussion, seize back the limelight at a time when in Israel and in the U.S., there is a complete economic crisis, there is political campaign, elections, and so on underway. And so this is all useful for grabbing headlines. It's extremely dangerous, too, because a lot of U.S. equipment is moved into the region. And so terrible things can happen by threat or without information and so on. So I think it's important to, in every way, be on the alert. But at the same time, it's important to recognize that Israel was not able to secure one square mile of Lebanon when they invaded, attacked, bombed in 2006. So the idea that Israel could take on Iran, they are capable of doing great damage, but this is not a big power. Now, the U.S. has shown again and again that they are capable of enormous destruction, and yet they faced utter failure of their policy in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and they are unleashing terrible havoc and destabilization in Syria, but no matter how much arms they pump in, they haven't succeeded in overturning the government in Syria. So there's a lot of talks and threat and demand that things go their way. But this is an empire in decline and decay. Its only sure ally is the one it has created, and that's Israel. And they are talking tough. But I do think that the meeting of the non-aligned movement in Iran is extremely important to challenge the sanctions and the threats against Iran. And there are countries around the world that really have no part in these threats and feel that these threats are also a threat to their own sovereignty, to their own ability to move forward in development.
Right, and this is in the backdrop, Charles Shoebridge, of plenty of intelligence that's indicating Iran's nuclear program is not military in dimension. So one conclusion, if you agree with this, is Israel using this to distract its public from its own domestic problems, We know the economic situation there. Unemployment figures have come out not too bright. And also we're seeing these self-immolations taking place quite frequently. And at the same time, obviously, the United States itself is also involved with its economic crisis, not to mention the Occupy movement in that country.
Yes, first of all, in respect of the United States, I think it's important to recognize that with the election really less than 100 days away, the economy and domestic matters are going to be absolutely of the main importance to electors and indeed to their media there. But yes, I think that factor is certainly more applicable to what's going on in Israel domestically. In respect of all countries, of course, like to distract attention from internal problems by raising the spectre of an external threat. But the key, or one of the key issues, is the one indeed that you've just raised, which is the extent to which there is agreement that there is indeed this military threat from Iran to its neighbours or to the wider world in terms of its nuclear programme. It's really crucial in this respect to look at divisions even within Israel itself, where not only is Iran claiming that it is not developing a nuclear programme that is towards nuclear weapons, but also it's clear that Israel, in terms of high-level briefings that really very significantly have been leaked or briefed to the media themselves in terms of high-level military and intelligence officers and assessments within Israel, coming to a conclusion that is quite similar. That is that no decision has been made within Iran as to whether to develop a nuclear weapons program. That has been concurred with by senior officials within the American administration. So, even stepping back from these threats, even domestically, internally within Israel, there is far from agreement. And if anything, really far more impetus coming from the side that is saying, actually, there is no need for this strike, simply because, actually, it's far from clear that Iran is developing a nuclear weapons program. All people, apart from Netanyahu and some hawks, and, of course, hawks in the US as well, believe that to be currently the case on the evidence that's currently available.
Except there was a statement that came out, Gordon Duff, from Defense Minister Ehud Barak, which made it interesting, and that was, along with other senior officials, that they gave out an estimate. They said that this conflict could last 30 days for Israel and claim 500 Israeli lives. I mean, that's quite surprising. How realistic are these estimates? Why would he say this?
Those are entirely sane. In 30 days, Israel may stop fighting, but I guarantee you that 20 years from today, missiles will be leaving Iran and hitting Tel Aviv every single minute of every single day. And unless all of the Israeli citizens want to get on a boat and go somewhere else, they have no control over when a war begins or ends. Without the United States, Israel has no military capacity at all. Their Air Force does not have refueling capacity. They don't have the class of aircraft necessary to maintain such a conflict. I disagree with an earlier speaker mentioning that Israel is an ally of the United States. The Israeli lobby may control the American press, may control certain aspects of the government, but the U.S. has no formal treaty with Israel of any kind whatsoever, and we do with many other countries, but not with Israel. If anything, Israel is far closer to Russia than it is to the U.S. In reality, was during the entire Cold War, most information we receive regarding this is false. And the issue about the U.S. election, it's one of the things that's being left out of this is the American Jews, and we have as many as 14 million Jews in America that are U.S. citizens. Obama is clearly opposed to the war. He has, according to polls, 85% support among American Jews, and when they were polled, only 4% of American Jews considered Iran a threat. A secondary issue is the IAEA. One of my staff members is Dr. Clinton Baston, who is an advisor to the IAEA and chief nuclear weapons designer for the Department of Energy prior to his retirement. He had critique statements made by David Albright, an advisor to the IAEA, pointing out to Albright that Albright himself wouldn't know a nuclear weapon if he sat on one, and that the teams that have been sent to Iran by the IAEA are utterly unqualified. And that Bastin was very clear about this, that Iran not only isn't making nuclear weapons, but the equipment within Iran could never make nuclear weapons. It is impossible to take 20% uranium isotopes designed for medical care and to raise them to weapons grade. It's a grade. It's an utter and absolute impossibility. The IAEA knows it. The National Intelligence Estimate for the U.S. knows it. Vladimir Putin knows it. Everyone knows it's technically impossible. And everyone is frankly lying about this.
So, Sarah Flounders, one conclusion has been reached about this is that this is not about Iran's nuclear program. This is about Iran gaining more strength, having more power in the region, and that is what scares the United States along with Israel.
Yes, exactly. Really, what concerns the U.S. is they are in every way losing their control and domination, which they have had for generations. And, of course, which they lost in Iran with the Iranian Revolution. But now they can feel in every sense that hold slipping with developments in Egypt and Tunisia. They could create great destruction, as they did in Libya, totally, 70 days of bombing. But they're shown even there incapable of rebuilding, incapable of a stable regime coming from it. When you look at the enormous, enormous destruction that they created in Iraq, what a terrible, that is a world crime in every sense, what they're doing today in Afghanistan. But they have been incapable of, despite this huge intervention and really tens of thousands of troops, to prevail.
Okay.
They find
I'm sorry
very
to jump in. I need to just move on quickly, Sarah Flounders. I apologize.
Turn against them.
Charles Shubridge, let me ask you this, which puts a different viewpoint. The reports that indicate that Israel actually, in no way, shape, or form, can dictate an attack since it's part of a global military agenda, centralized and coordinated by U.S. Strategic Command called U.S. STRATCOM, which involves NATO and sub-Arab allies of the United States, all integrated operationally amongst each other. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I don't think that's... I think on a broad strategic global level, there may be something in that. And certainly the political and military structures are in place, particularly in terms of, for example, intelligence sharing and so on. But I still, it is technically possible for Israel to mount an attack against Iran without overt American support. But that isn't necessarily contradicting what an earlier speaker has said. They would be able to mount such an attack, but based on their capabilities and the prospects of success, that attack would be purely symbolic. It would not in any major way destroy Iran's capabilities, either militarily or in terms of its nuclear program.
Okay, and final question to Gordon Duff. Gordon Duff, this is a yes or no question. Will Israel attack Iran?
You wanted that short an answer? That's my answer.
I did not hear your answer.
No, not at all.
Okay,
Israel
we'll end it on that.
Noise,
thank you very much.
Nothing else.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Gordon Duff there talking to us. And let me thank our other guests, co-director of International Action Center, Sarah Flounders from New York, and security analyst Charles Shubridge from London. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. Newsroom at PressTV.ir for any comments or suggestions. From Mikko Vitahway and the entire team, it's goodbye.